Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The subject is gallbladder disease, special clinical focus. And once again, I'll refer you to a series of articles that I wrote. You can find them at drhoffman.com. Demolishing Myths About Gallbladder Disease, Parts 1 and 2, and then a third installment, 19 Ways to Reduce Your Risk of Gallbladder Stones. So we're talking about misconceptions and myths about gallbladder disease. And one of them, and I have to say, this is comes from my own community of integrative medicine. And that is the notion that a liver gallbladder flush is going to get rid of stones. Now, it may be that if you've got a sluggish gallbladder, and there is such a thing, lack of gallbladder motility, you can get rid of what's called sludge from your gallbladder by doing a liver gallbladder flush. There's no question that if you consume a lot of cider or apple juice with lemon and then top it off with a big dollop of olive oil, that you're going to cause your gallbladder to contract. And thereby, you may be able to detox, remove some bile. This may not be a bad way to detoxify the body, because the bile is a great way to, it conducts a lot of toxins out of the liver and into the gastrointestinal tract. And that's the way that you, one of the body's natural mechanisms for removing toxins via the stool. But if you have stones, can you get rid of the stones without surgery with liver gallbladder flush? And some people report, and they do it, they gleefully report that, they look in the toilet and there's these little green balls in the toilet. And those are, they look for all the world like gallstones. And so they conclude that they, gotten rid of all these gallstones. So some scientific studies have been done on this. And what they've concluded, they've actually analyzed what appear to be gallstones that were excreted after the liver gallbladder flush. And what they found is that they have a high concentration of oleic acid, which is olive oil. And they're not solid like stones or hard. They're actually kind of soft. You can cut right through them. And they are actually, in an act of kitchen chemistry, they are soap-like, because when you mix olive oil with a source of high potassium, in this case, that would be lemon juice, you're going to get what's called saponification, which is a creation of a soap-like structure. But it's not hard like a stone, and it's not a stone. It just, by composition, it's kind of what you excrete after it gets mixed up inside your body. So the results of these studies convince me that really there's not a lot of scientific substantiation for doing a liver gallbladder flush. Another controversy is whether stones can be dissolved with prescription or herbal medications. Now, for a while, before the advent of easier surgery, they were doing quite a lot of work with trying to dissolve gallstones with something called ursodeoxycholic acid. Now, urso, if you know your Latin, means bear. And in fact, there's a big industry in China that supports their herbal industry, which is cruelly raising bears and extracting bile from them. And this has actually been internationally condemned. It's a horrible form of animal abuse. But bear bile is really popular in traditional Chinese medicine, interestingly. Well, the very selfsame substance, another substance that's similar called quinodeoxycholate, can actually dissolve cholesterol stones. But the problem is that most stones are not pure cholesterol stones. They actually have a bile component. And the stones that appear on X-rays are what are called radioopaque stones. They're too far gone to be dissolved by those means. What are called radiolucent stones, which are rarer, pure radiolucent stones, usually smaller, earlier stage of development, those stones are more amenable to being dissolved by these substances. Like, okay, you know, like we said earlier, the more bile you have, the more you can solubilize your cholesterol, and therefore these medications are sometimes used in liver diseases where there's too much bile. They're also interestingly used, quinodeoxycholate is used to as a treatment for lipomas. You can actually inject lipomas with quino, and it is thought that that will help to dissolve away the fatty deposit. But this is of limited practical utility. There's also a drug called Roaccol, which is popular in Europe, but also without strong scientific evidence that it dissolves stones, although some studies show that Roaccol, which is made of terpenes, certain plant substances that are like essential oils, these can reduce the saturation of cholesterol. But if you already have well-developed stones, it's unlikely that that's going to take care of things. So I would conclude that stones are unlikely to be dissolved with either prescription or herbal medications. There's another argument against doing surgery, and that is that surgery doesn't alleviate problems for a lot of people. And that's true, is a lot of people come in with digestive problems, and they say, well, let's take your gallbladder out. And then they say, I'm no better. And they could be no better for a couple of reasons. One is that while they did have gallstones, their problems were not due to the gallstones. There's so many reasons, you know, bad diet, you know, dysbiosis, lack of proper digestive enzymes, food intolerances, that people have indigestion that, you know, they think that just, you know, taking out the gallstones is going to make it better. Well, their problems remain. But it's not the fault of the surgery, except in some cases, and estimates vary, but, you know, probably significant single digits of patients who've had gallbladder surgery have a complication from it. And that is sometimes that a stone gets dislodged and passes into, say, the common bile duct or pancreatic ducts. And that, and I've seen this in some patients, they're actually worse after the surgery than before. Not that, you know, the surgery was unwarranted, but it's a known complication of the surgery. Now, does that mean you shouldn't get gallbladder surgery if you really need it? The answer is, you know, I think many holistic sites emphasize the fact that gallbladder surgery is either worthless or that it creates a lot of harm. And some of the sites talk about, oh, you know, you'll never absorb fat the way you used to. You'll have to eat a very low-fat diet henceforth because you need bile to digest and you won't have a gallbladder. And besides, all those beneficial fat-soluble nutrients, essential fatty acids and vitamin A and D and E and K, you're going to have to take supplements for the rest of your life because you won't be digesting fat properly. Well, I looked in vain for references on that, and I could not find a lot of references to suggest that among the millions of Americans, literally tens of millions of Americans who have their gallbladders out, that there is an epidemic of fat-soluble nutrient deficiency or essential fatty acid deficiency. So while it's a good idea to supplement with those things afterwards, it turns out that humans and a few animals are the only mammals who have gallbladders. And many animals don't have gallbladders, and they do relatively well without them. What happens when you don't have a gallbladder is that your release of bile is not timed to your meals. So you're going to release bile continuously. Bile is essential for digestion and the micelization of fat, which enables it to be digested. But without a gallbladder, it might mean that you have to be a little more careful about super high fat meals all at once, because it may exceed the capacity of your bile to solubilize the fat. And so some patients are on a little bit of a lower fat diet, or they eat smaller meals afterwards, and that's to the good. But unfortunately, what often happens is after people have their gallbladder out, they feel fine. They no longer have any breaks on what they eat. They don't get gallbladder attacks when they eat too much. And they end up gaining weight, which is not good. And it's kind of evidence of the fact that their digestion is actually pretty robust even after having their gallbladder out. So they don't often require bile supplements and digestive enzymes after their gallbladders are removed. And they certainly don't need to adhere to an especially low-fat diet. So let's look at some of the things that actually, you know, that I talk about in this article, 19 ways that you can prevent or reverse gallbladder disease. Well, as I mentioned, URSO and quinodeoxycholic acid, these are conventional treatments, not used very often anymore. There's a gallstone smashing treatment called lithotripsy. But again, with the advent of surgery, it makes it easier to take out the gallbladder, so it's kind of a Rube Goldberg way of dealing with the stones. Maybe in cases where people are very high risk for surgery, they might use that. Statins, as I said, will lower cholesterol and could prevent it. What I like especially is something that I discovered early in my career, which is the Dr. James Brenneman elimination diet for gallbladder disease. And in a remarkable study in 1968, he took 69 patients, six of whom had post-cholecystectomy syndrome, and the others had still their gallbladders. After elimination of the following offending foods, and I'll give them to you in a minute, all 69, that's 100%, were free of gallbladder symptoms. And moreover, they could elicit the gallbladder symptoms, which were re-triggered upon reintroduction of these food precipitants. The primary offending foods were eggs. 93% of people had intolerance to eggs. So good bet to get off eggs. Pork, 64%. Onions, 52%. Chicken and turkey, 35%. Milk, 25%. Coffee, 22%. Oranges, 19%. And then a smaller percentage had problems with corn, beans, nuts, apples, tomatoes, peas, cabbage, spices, peanuts, fish, and rye. And so the diet could actually consist of some foods that people are tolerant to. That would be beef and potatoes. Interestingly, beef, a relatively high-fat food, seemed to be not on that list, suggesting that this is not just about fat content. It's about certain properties of the food causing, and I'll use the term in air quotes, allergic reactions, because it's not properly an allergy like sneezing or wheezing, but it's a type of food intolerance. And I've actually taken patients who've had gallbladder attacks, put them on this diet, and lo and behold, they're symptom-free unless they eat one of the precipitating foods. So it's an intriguing approach, a little bit cumbersome and restrictive, but can work. Lecithin is helpful, and phosphatidylcholine are helpful. Studies have shown that, you know, as I said earlier, the more phospholipid production by the body, and some people are deficient in choline. There's a very high percentage of people who don't get enough choline. Also, when you have methylation problems, you may not synthesize enough. So that argues for SAMe and other methylating agents, B12, B6, folate. But in an interesting series of studies, there is a condition where women who, by the way, these women have a very high likelihood of gallstones, but during pregnancy, they develop high levels of bilirubin, and their bile kind of gets stuck in their liver. And it causes a terrible itchiness, and you don't want to use a lot of medications to suppress itch. So in one trial, they gave SAMe, S-adenosylmethionine, to these women who had pruritus of pregnancy due to they only get it during pregnancy for some reason. Pregnancy causes, perhaps because of a high estrogen state. But what they found was that SAMI at 800 milligrams a day helped to control those symptoms. So interesting about methylating agents. Vitamin C may protect against gallstones. In animal experiments, fish oil, they used prairie dogs to simulate human circumstances of gallbladder disease, because prairie dogs have a digestive system that is similar to humans when it comes to gallbladder. Taurine can be effective. Taurine actually helps to conjugate bile, helps it recirculate. Magnesium, in a study called Long-Term Effect of Magnesium Consumption on the Risk of Symptomatic Gallstone Disease Among Men, it was found that magnesium helps, maybe. Magnesium helps motility in the intestinal tract. Maybe that's part of it. Certain herbs called cholagogues may help. These would include berberine from golden seal, Oregon grapefruit, milk thistle. These things may help, although the studies on those are a little bit less rigorous. Drinking coffee appears to help, but it has to be caffeinated. Coffee alone made a difference. Tea doesn't help, but coffee contains certain compounds that seem to be helpful. Alcohol intake, moderate alcohol intake, seems to have a protective effect. And as I mentioned earlier, probiotics may have a beneficial effect, but only certain ones. And there's a company called Orthobiotics that is, it's not a company that you'd be familiar with. It's not a commercial vitamin company. It's a company that develops probiotic products, and usually in an effort to create drugs, functional probiotics. And they've created a type of Lactobacillus plantarum that it has been shown to lower cholesterol dramatically by double digits, but also it works on bile. And by helping to promote the circulation of bile, it thus competes with the cholesterol, sweeps it out of the system, but also may help to protect the gallbladder. So it would be interesting if, you know, when that becomes commercially available, if we can give it to people prone to gallstones and slow the development of gallbladder disease in their situation. So this is, you know, the message I want to leave you with is that gallbladder disease is preventable, okay? However, once you have gallstones, it's difficult to reverse. I think you can live with gallstones, but sometimes that's a little bit of a precarious circumstance, because let's say you go, you know, traveling to some foreign place and you're a little older, you go on a cruise and you're going to eat a little differently, and, you know, you may want to get your gallbladder out while you're still relatively healthy to avoid ending up in an emergency room in, say, Albania, you know, or in one of the former Soviet republics, or in, you know, in Bora Bora. So, you know, I think it's a lifestyle disease. Because of modern surgical techniques, getting your gallbladder out electively is an important thing to do. The message I would have for natural practitioners is, I think you have to tell patients that, you know, you have a choice. You can get your gallbladder out, but there are also some natural ways you can cope with gallbladder disease. And you can, if you find the right patient who is willing to comply, you can get some really good results in terms of prevention of gallstones, and you can actually get ancillary health benefits, because what heals the gallbladder also reduces your risk for cardiovascular disease and cerebrovascular disease, all the degenerative diseases that are associated with poor diet, obesity, and sedentary lifestyle. But success does require a great deal of patient commitment. And so I'll leave you with that. And for more details, once again, please refer to my articles in our newsletter, which are now posted at drhoffman.com, a series of three articles on gallbladder disease. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.